Charlton Bourne edits the news.
Good evening, everybody. In the death of Cardinal Mundelein, the country mourns the passing of an outstanding church leader. If Cardinal Mundelein had not been a great churchman, he might have been a great statesman or a great political leader. In addition to many other qualities, he had the gift of high moral indignation and was never afraid to speak out when he felt that this was needed. He was the first prince of the church in America to protest publicly against the persecution of the Catholic Church in Germany. As the spiritual leader of 1.25 million Catholics, his words carried weight. As a man of German ancestry, he was naturally profoundly disturbed about the pagan aspects of the Nazi creed. He had a profound sympathy for labor and an equally profound contempt for anti-Semitism. In his own life and works, he illustrated again the genius of the Catholic Church for entering the humblest home and finding there the young men who, later on, reflect credit upon their church and upon themselves for the service that they render mankind. Secretary of State Hull has called on all American citizens not to travel on ships of belligerent nations within a specified danger zone in the North Atlantic Ocean. And he said in that connection, "I regard such travel as dangerous, considering the character of the warfare that is now in progress." Of course, directly, Mr. Hull was referring to submarine warfare. After all, he reminds us of what happened in connection with the Lusitania. You remember there, it was the German consulate that inserted an advertisement in a New York newspaper in which they warned Americans against traveling on the Lusitania. Well, you know what happened. Now, in this new war, it is the Secretary of State of the United States who, in his official position, issues this warning. And, of course, that gives it an altogether different character. And also gives those Americans who ignore it an altogether different status than they would have if they had not ignored it. And after all, as we hear what Germany says about unlimited submarine warfare, and as we read about what happened today in the South Atlantic, where an armed sea raider sank a 5,000-ton British merchant ship, well, we remember what may happen to any ship on any ocean, anywhere, today. We recall also what happened in the early weeks of the World War, when the Emden gave such a merry chase to the many, many Allied ships that attempted to capture her. And we remember the exploits of Count Luckner with his armed raiders, and what they succeeded in accomplishing before they were finally brought to bay. And so this single sea raider in the South Atlantic may be the cause of a great deal of worry and trouble and expense to the British Admiralty before it is captured. British warplanes today dropped leaflets over Berlin. That's proof that they could have bombed Berlin. It's proof that they could have bombed the Ruhr district, which is the Pittsburgh of Germany. Very much more important to bomb at this particular time than Berlin. Why hasn't it been done? Well, for a moment, let me contrast for you the task that confronts the air raider who carries a very light load of paper pamphlets, who has a speedier craft than the average bomber, who travels far higher than the air than a bomber usually travels, and who can stay as high in the air as he pleases because the force of gravity will in time carry his leaflets down to earth, and it matters not where leaflets fall. But power dives by bombers, they're costly. The British know that as a result of what happened when they attacked some of the German fleet units at Wilhelmshaven. They know it as a result of what happened when they tackled German fleet units in the Bay of Helgoland. And also, as far as bombing towns is concerned, the British don't want to begin it. It's a sorry business. It means the death of thousands of women and children. And the British are not going to be the first to do that if they can help it. But since we know what war is and how war develops, it's a safe thing to say that it will not be long before both sides will be doing it and will be saying that they are only doing it in reprisal for what the other side has done. The great battle to keep America neutral is on in Washington. And yet, somehow in many respects, it seems a sham battle. It's hard for many people to believe that a slight shift of a single law, either in one direction or the other, is the decisive thing with reference to our entering the war or keeping out of the war. And yet it's perfectly natural that debaters who are convinced that they are right in wanting this kind of a law or that kind of a law should try and make us feel that complete agreement with their point of view is the only thing that can keep the United States neutral. So, everyone who follows that debate has a right to follow it with his own point of view in mind, has to remember that in the course of oratory, many things are said which are not said in the quiet of peaceful discussion. That's inevitable. Oratory, when it concerns things in which a great deal of emotion is involved, is very apt to carry the speaker a little farther than he would go in sober conversation. And so it's just as well for us to bear that in mind as we follow this eloquent discussion. And an important discussion, of course, it is, because a good deal depends not only on the particular kind of law that we pass, but on our purpose in passing it. And there is the point on which we are beginning to have a good deal of question. Some people say that the only reason that we're changing our Neutrality Act is because we want to help the Allies against Germany. And it is true that according to the latest surveys, 83% of the American people favor the Allied cause. So, it is perhaps natural that since this is a country that is governed by public opinion, and since public opinion favors the Allies, that a great many people in and out of Congress, in and out of the administration, want to do something that indicates that sympathy. But you will notice that none of the administration leaders who have spoken thus far have frankly admitted that, yes, they want to change the Neutrality Act in order to help the Allies. And if they haven't done that, perhaps one reason is that they don't believe that that is why we are changing it, but perhaps another reason is that they feel that it's better to confine the argument to the statement that by changing the Neutrality Act, we can keep out of war because 99% of the American people want to keep out of war. And that's the reason, too, of course, why those who want to retain the embargo on arms, who don't want to change the Neutrality Act, that's why they say the way to keep us out of war is not to change it. You see, that happens to be the argument that makes the most immediate appeal to the great mass of Americans. And that's why those on both sides use it. Now, both presumably can't be right. In other words, either the change in the act makes it more likely or less likely that we'll get into war. So someone must be wrong. But who is it? Well, the actual truth is that neither the one side nor the other can tell at this time. We can guess at it. We can have our own ideas about it. We can be profoundly convinced that we are right with reference to whatever idea we may have. But we cannot possibly predict that this or that particular thing is going to have such and such a result when it comes to such an issue as this country is getting into the war because so many, many other factors are involved. And it may very well be that the other factors will be of infinitely more importance than any particular phraseology with regard to a neutrality statute. So let's not permit ourselves to become too alarmed over this debate, which is bound to be carried on in terms of emotion as much as in terms of quiet, well-reasoned argument. I say that on the basis of the impression that has been made upon me by reading whatever I have been able to read of the press reports of the addresses of both Senator Borah and Senator Pittman. Both men entirely sincere, extremely vigorous, but to me, who have been studying the question for a great many years, and attempting to come to a sober conclusion, neither particularly convincing. The Nazi press hints today that Italy will aid Germany in the war unless, and by the unless, the Nazi press means unless the Allied powers accept the bid for peace which Hitler is going to make within a few days. But remember that the Italian press doesn't say that. The Italian press is much more conservative. And let's not take what the Nazi press says as to what Russia is going to do or what Italy is going to do. Those two powers can speak for themselves. Russia is speaking for herself now in the Baltic countries. And the Latvian foreign minister is asked to come to Moscow to make concessions with reference to naval bases. And the Lithuanian foreign minister, controlling the Gulf on the Baltic, which is also important, also bid to Moscow. Much will happen, not all to Germany's advantage. Good night.